All right, let us now find out about the murder hornet. Fine. I tried to find a non-coronavirus-related story to share with you today. We actually have a couple different ones that we'll be sharing throughout the day. But the first one we landed on is just as scary as hell. So let's figure it all out. Here's Doug Tarin. He's a chief curator at the Chicago Academy of Sciences, Peggy Notobart Nature Museum, which is a beautiful museum right along the lakefront there at Fullerton, and a great place for the kids once we're back in the swing of these things. Now, what in the hell is a murder hornet?
Hi, the murder hornet, or the Asian giant hornet, is a species from Asia that was recently discovered in eastern Washington. And so it is a new invasive species to North America. And they're really scary looking, but they're probably not as scary as they look.
Okay, now it's been described here. Let me see if Doug, if I've got this right here. Doctor, I'll call you doctor. It confers authority. Okay, so 50 people a year are killed in Japan by these things, and it has, and you can tell what it is because it's larger. It's 1.5 to 2 inches long. It has a large yellow orange head with prominent eyes, so you can actually see the face of this thing?
Well, wasps tend to have very prominent heads and eyes, so it's easy to see that on most wasps. A little bit of context on the 50 deaths a year. In the United States, running back to 2000, we record an average of 62 deaths a year because of insect stings. So mostly it has to do with people being allergic to bee and wasp stings.
But in this case, this particular wasp doesn't necessarily, this particular hornet doesn't necessarily, you don't necessarily have to be allergic to it to have a really bad reaction to it, right?
Well, a lot of bees and wasps have very painful stings. There are these things out in the desert southwest called tarantula hawks, and they make their living by hunting for tarantulas. So they need a very potent sting to be able to immobilize such a large prey. So it's not uncommon to have bees and wasps have very, very powerful, potent, extremely painful stings.
Yeah. That didn't answer my question, but I want to be less concerned here because I read here that they have a specific, the sting of this murder hornet is painful, as you mentioned, but it's packed with neurotoxins. So even if someone's not allergic to the hornet, multiple stings have the potential to be very dangerous to the recipient. Is that right?
Well, I think the key there is multiple stings. I mean, most insect venom has various type of neurotoxins or cytotoxins or any number of type of toxic compounds in them. It's what makes them venom. And so I think that the internet in particular is freaking out a lot more about this species than is really warranted.
Okay, so how about for the honeybee? It's not good for them, right? Isn't that...
It is not good for the honeybee. That is true. They are one of the types of wasps that will make raids on the nest of other social wasps or bees. And so honeybees at that point are on the menu, and they can really, because they're so big, tear through a honeybee colony very quickly.
So do they do it in groups? Is it like a group raid, or can an individual murder hornet take out a colony of bees by itself?
They tend to make group attacks on other insect nests. So it's like they overwhelm with numbers.
Did I read this right, that they actually decapitate the honeybees?
I don't know the answer to that, but it would not surprise me if they did. That's not atypical.
Oh, God, it's like Game of Thrones. I mean, really, it's like one of those things. The White Walkers or whatever. I mean, I don't I don't know how I feel about this. All right, so they're in the this hornet doctor is up in the Pacific Northwest right now. They think it has gotten here from Asia, you know, sort of the same way that humans did, somehow, some way, landing there first. So the question is, will they be able to make it across the entire United States, or do they have to be in a certain type of environment?
Well, I think the question is, will they persist even in the Pacific Northwest? And that's an unknown at the moment. A very limited number of nests have been found, all of which have been destroyed already. And in fact, one of the things that people are trying to do to deal with them is to prevent them from establishing more than this tiny foothold here. Will they make it here? When non-native species arrive on this continent, it's really an unknown how far they will disperse and what all of the effects on ecosystems are. So we really don't know. They could get here. I guess the good news is, even if they do get here, they won't be the largest hornet in Chicago. We have a native wasp that is just slightly larger than the Asian giant hornet.
We do?
Yeah, it's called the cicada killer, and they attack cicadas and sting them and bring them back to their nests and provision their young with them. They're about 2 inches long.
Oh my God! Where am I finding these? Now I have to worry about that.
They will be around in the middle of the summer at the same time that the cicadas are around, and they're very common species here. I have them in my yard. I've seen them in Lincoln Park. They're not at all an uncommon species. They're not terribly aggressive. Most wasps aren't aggressive unless you attack their nests, and that's true with the ancient giant hornet, too.
Well, that's very good of them. I guess that's polite on some level. But now, you know, you mentioned that 62 people die a year from insect bites. That's insect bites total? That includes bee stings and stuff? Because I know there are some people who have, like, they go into anaphylactic shock as a result of that, right?
Yeah, that's all stinging insects. And that's, as I have read the 50 people in Japan every year, that is also all stinging insects.
Oh. All right. Well, then, so, doctor, are we to assume that the name murder hornet is not accurate, that maybe this particular species should sue somebody about that?
I think if I were this species' PR department, I would be on my phone with my lawyer right now.
Exactly. Get Don on the phone. All right, let me ask you what's happening over at the Peggy Notarbart Museum. Now that obviously you guys are not open for business and open and bringing kids and stuff like that in, are you doing online things?
We are. We've one of the things that we've done that's been extremely popular, we've got a daily newsletter that we're sending out to members and others. It's become very popular. It's got a variety of activities for all ages. There's a lot for kids there. We have formal lessons in each one, and it brings the best of the Nature Museum. Since you can't go to the Nature Museum, it brings the best of the Nature Museum to your home.
Excellent. Yeah, all right,
If you're not a member, you can sign up at naturemuseum.org/stem to get your own copy of the newsletter.
Naturemuseum.org/what?
STEM, STEM.
STEM, okay. All right. Well, this is a great, if you are a family in the Chicago area and you want a really excellent afternoon or, you know, morning and afternoon on a weekend once this whole thing starts to open back up, the Peggy Notarbart Museum is an excellent stop right across the street from the Lincoln Park Zoo. That's a good 1-2 punch right there. So it's you park once. That's the most important thing downtown. People are always freaked out by that, and they shouldn't be, because there's plenty of parking at the Lincoln Park Zoo. All right, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. It was great.
Thank you very much. Great talking to you.
Doug Tarin, who is a PhD, by the way. He's not just an average guy. He is part of the Peggy Notarbart Nature Museum.